I'm Marty Moscowen. Welcome to Radio Times. The Pennsylvania American Civil Liberties Union wants the Commonwealth to correct what they call misleading, confusing, and false information about what voters will need to do when they go to the polls to vote on November 6th. Here's a video that's on the website of the Pennsylvania Department of State telling voters about the law.
If you care about this election...
If you care about this election... If you have an opinion.
If you want a voice.
If you want a voice.
If you want to make a difference.
Then show it.
Show it.
Show it.
Show it.
When voting in Pennsylvania this election day, November 6th, you will be asked but not required to show a photo ID. To learn more about how to get a photo ID for future elections and the voter ID law, call 1-877-VOTES-PA or visit votespa.com.
Judge Simpson ruled in early October that while voters may be asked to show an ID, they can still cast their ballot if they don't have it, that is, unless they are voting for the first time. Well, joining us once again is Ron Ruman, spokesperson for the Pennsylvania Department of State. And Ron, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Marty, good to be here.
Also with us is Vic Volchek, the legal director of the ACLU of Pennsylvania. And Vic, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Thanks for having me.
So what false and misleading information is the ACLU talking about? Vic, go ahead.
Well, first, the ad that you just played is extremely subtle. And if it wasn't for an avalanche of information put out by the state over the last 6 months, bombarding people with information, telling them they need ID in order to vote, that might be okay. But people who've been told you need ID to vote hear that ad, and they just don't pick up on the fact that there is no longer a photo ID requirement for this election day. And on top of sort of this blizzard of advertising out there that's, you know, suggesting that you need ID, but in the end there's a little tagline saying, well, you'll just be asked but not required, the state has also sent out a number of mailings, including one from the Department of Aging, where they put in an outdated postcard that actually tells people that they must have photo ID to vote. Not you're going to be asked, but not required. It actually says you must have ID. So we've gone back to the court and said, look, you need to order the Commonwealth to stop that and to take more proactive and corrective measures to make sure people understand that you absolutely do not need to have photo ID to vote in this election.
Well, Ron, hold on 1 second, Vic, just picking up on that particular point. Ron, is the Department of State going to correct that misinformation?
If we're talking specifically
about the
one mailing that went from the Department of Aging after the judge's ruling, it should make it clear it went to about 9,000 people. It was part of the PACE prescription drug information that they get and was a mailer stuffer in that mailing. What the Department of Aging has done is reached out to various groups that deal with senior citizens, area agencies on aging, through other groups that deal directly with seniors to make sure that they have the correct information. As far as whether the Department of Aging was doing a specific remailing to that group of folks, I don't believe that was the case, but they were reaching out to all seniors through a number of other means.
But Vic, are you saying you want the Department of State to speak directly or to do a mailing themselves to correct this misinformation?
Yeah, look, we asked for this a week ago, and the judge has decided he's going to give the Commonwealth 11 days to answer what was really an emergency motion. So, I mean, as time is getting shorter, it's going to be harder and harder to take any kind of corrective action. So we did ask that the Department of Aging do a mailing to the 9,000 people who had gotten this. But, you know, the thing that the state could do now that would be most helpful, which I don't think they're going to do, is they've been planning on doing robocalls to, I think, all households in Pennsylvania that have a voter. And use those robocalls to very clearly say, just a reminder, there is no requirement for people to show a photo ID at the polls on Election Day this year. But my understanding is they're not going to do that either.
Well, let's find out. Ron Ruman, is the State Department going to do that? Department of State, rather?
We had been planning to do robocalls when the law was going to be fully implemented for this election. We are not going to do the robocalls now. But let me go back, if I might, for just a moment to the commercial that you played, and I guess offer my thought on that. I think it's very clear in there. It's it states verbatim that voters will be asked but not required to show photo ID this election. That's pretty clear to me. I mean, I don't know how you can say it much more clearly than that, and that, in fact, is the law. What the judge said in his ruling October 2nd was specifically the education and outreach campaign is to continue, and the law that's in effect will, it's not a matter of whether they may be asked, they will be asked for photo ID when they go to the polls as they were in the primary, yes, and they will be allowed to vote whether they have it or not. That is correct. That's what that spot says. But the judge also says, very important to remember, the judge has left the law in effect at this point. So barring further action, it will be in effect for future elections. And in his ruling, he said, we need to continue with our obligation to educate voters about that. And that is what that spot is doing. So it wasn't quite as simple as just saying, oh, don't bring an ID for November 6th. We had other responsibilities to fulfill with that spot, and I believe we have. And again, I think it's very clear. It says you'll be asked but not required to show photo ID. That's pretty clear to me.
Well, let me go back to you, Vic, and even going back to the judge's decision in early October, which is he did uphold the law, although he delayed the implementation. Do you think it's the judge's decision that has created some confusion here?
Yeah, we definitely think that decision is creating confusion. We had actually argued against what the judge ended up doing. Of course, we wanted to block the law from being in effect for this election, and he did that. But allowing the Department of State to continue to ask people for ID, and the court also refused our request to block all these informational attempts. And, you know, Ron, with all due respect, we have gotten so many calls from people who say, I just saw this billboard, or I saw this bus ad, or I just heard this radio commercial, and I thought we weren't supposed to show ID. And so in all of those situations, we thought, oh, they must still be running one of the old ones. And in most of those cases where we've checked it out, it's a new one. And the people are just not picking up that very subtle message that's at the end. They're just seeing show it, show it, show it, people holding a picture of a driver's license, and they're just not understanding it. And the only way to, I think, counter the information that's been out there for the last 7 months about needing photo ID is to just come out and say, look, please know that even if you don't have photo ID, you can vote this election day. And that's not counter to anything that the judge has ruled.
And Ron, just picking up on what Vic had said earlier, was the Department of State going to make robocalls? Was that the plan?
We were going to do robocalls informing people they needed ID, yes, when that was still in effect.
And why wouldn't you make robocalls that explain some of the complexities of the law?
Well, the feeling
if
there, was...
And if there is confusion out there, is it not the job of the Department of State to fix the confusion?
Well, I guess that goes back to the first part of the question there, if there is confusion out there. And I mean, Vic's saying they're getting a lot of calls. I don't doubt him. We've gotten a few. I'll be honest with you. Most of the people who have been in touch with us feel the message is very clear. And I would go back to what that commercial that you played says. And the other folks in my office brought in an internet ad that popped up on Philly.com this morning when he went to the sports page. And it says, when voting this election day, you will be asked but not required to show a photo ID. It's pretty clear. I mean, you know, we aren't getting the avalanche of calls of people saying, I'm not sure about it. We've gotten a few, but we do need, you know, again, our obligation is to educate people as to what the law is and what they will be asked at the polls, and they will be asked for ID. So, you know, we think we need to yield to what the judge's ruling is, and I guess I would take a little bit of issue with the premise of the first question as to if there is confusion. We haven't seen the widespread, you know, avalanche of calls that of folks being confused about it.
Vic, going back to your argument or complaint about this, is it the words "show it"? Is that what you think are misleading people that you're hearing from?
Well, that's part of it. Look, it's a 30-second ad. It's essentially the same ad that started running before the court's injunction, and the whole ad is designed to alert people that you need to have photo ID to vote. And so when you get to the last, what, 3 or 5 seconds, it says, oh, by the way, you'll be asked but not required to show it. Given, you know, the Commonwealth mailed a postcard at the beginning of September to every household in the Commonwealth that has a voter in it, where they expressly said you must have photo ID. So, you know, the message that has been out there is that if you don't have photo ID, don't bother showing up, you can't vote. And now, all of a sudden, that has completely changed because of the injunction that we got on October 2nd. And the Commonwealth is not clearly telling people that. If you ran an ad that said, look, you no longer need to show ID on election day, oh, by the way, you'll be asked, but you don't have to have it in order to vote, that would make a huge difference. But having the Show It campaign where 95% of it is all about having ID, and then there's a little tagline or on the billboards or other written ads, it's just in fine print, it suggests, if you have it, show it. I mean, that's just not good enough to reverse what people have been told over the last 7 months.
Ron, go ahead.
Well, I guess we just have to agree to disagree on that. We think that the message is clear. And again, I go back to the fact that we have the judge's order said the outreach campaign must continue to educate people about voter ID, which, barring further action, is coming. So we have that dual responsibility here. And in addition to the ads, there, as I mentioned, what the Department of Aging is doing, we have continued to do community outreach since the judge's ruling, certainly over 50 meetings around the state, probably closer to 100 by this point, and continued media stories that are out there. There's been rather constant stories. I can tell you, not a day has gone by, Saturdays and Sundays included, that I have not been working with reporters on this issue. So I guess to say, to me, that it's getting out there pretty heavily on a consistent and constant basis, and again, we contend we're following what the judge's order is and are letting folks know that they do not need, and I will say very clearly here, you do not need to show photo ID to vote on Election Day, but you will be asked to show photo ID, and in future elections, unless a change happens, you will need it. So we are also continuing to encourage people to get IDs because we feel it will be in effect in the future, and we want to let folks know that so that we don't have a situation where, you know, we approach the next election and people may not have an ID. Again, we think the great majority of people do, but for those who don't, we want to let them know you probably should go get an ID.
And Vic, we're almost out of time here. I'm giving you the last word. Is that good enough?
You know, the way Ron just said it would be wonderful if they could package that into a robocall. We're saying you do not need to have ID on Election Day this year. Now, you'll be asked, but you don't have to show it. Would be good to get it in the future. That's a perfect message, but that's not what's getting out. What's getting the part about not needing ID is obscured by the rest of the ad, and people are simply not getting it. So, we've asked the court to order the Commonwealth to do more. Given that the judge has delayed things for at least 11 days, we're not optimistic that anything's going to change. But
well,
people just need to know
we gotta stop.
Do not need photo ID on Election Day.
And
you're
welcome. That's Vic Folchek. And thanks to you, Ron Rubin, for joining us as well. We'll be right back.
Bartlett Tree Experts supports WHYY and offers the removal of hazardous trees and scientific treatments, including pruning and disease diagnoses. Locations in Montgomery, Chester, and Bucks counties, and Cherry Hill, New Jersey. More information at bartlett.com.
The Kimmel Center supports WHYY and presents Chick Corea and Gary Burton, November 9th in Verizon Hall. The program features music from the longtime collaborators' forthcoming album, Hot House, with new takes on standards by Weill, Monk, Jobim, and Lennon and McCartney. The duo is joined on stage by the Harlem String Quartet to explore the intersections between jazz, classical, and popular music. Tickets at KimmelCenter.org.
Sure, shouting angry pundits can be entertaining, but when they run out of breath, ask yourself this. Did you actually learn something new, or just get the same old spin? Trust Election 2012 on WHYY for the real story, not the spin. Each day, our team of journalists is out there finding the stories that showcase every perspective, not just one slanted side. WHYY-FM, newsworks.org, and WHYY-TV, where you go to know.
WHYY is supported by Works For Me, funded by CMS grant CFDA number 93.768. Works For Me offers hiring tips, training, and help finding employees. Details at worksforme-pa.org/employer.
I'm Marty Moss-Cohen, and you're listening to Radio Times here on WHYY. Voter ID laws and challenges to those laws have led to concern among voters about what they need to bring to the polls on November 6. Misleading robocalls and mailers and registration glitches have only added to the confusion, I should say. We asked David Becker to join us. He's director of election initiatives for the Pew Charitable Trust, author of a report that came out earlier this year about the need to upgrade the country's voter registration system. I should add that he's a former senior trial attorney for the voting section of the Department of Justice's Civil Rights Division. He also supervised federal monitoring of elections and helped direct the Department of Justice policy on enforcing the Help America Vote Act. And David Becker, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Thanks for having me, Marty.
I was just talking with Vic Volchek, the legal director of the Pennsylvania ACLU, and Ron Ruman, spokesperson for the Pennsylvania Department of State, about what at least the ACLU says is some confusion about the law in Pennsylvania. The judge basically upheld the law but has delayed its implementation, and now there's confusion about what people need to bring to the polls to vote. Pennsylvania, one of a number of states that at least tried to pass or passed voter ID laws. Is there confusion looking at all these various states about what people are supposed to do on November 6th when they go to the polls?
Yeah, Marty, I think there certainly is a potential for confusion. What we see in this election cycle is there have been an extraordinarily high number of election law changes in the last 2 to 4 years. So a lot of people who haven't voted since 2008 are going to find something has changed. And that's in addition to the redistricting that, of course, already occurred. So many precincts have changed. Where you voted might have changed as a natural consequence of redistricting. So voters need to be very aware, find out where they're supposed to vote, find out what the rules are in their state. ID laws have changed. In some cases, early voting and absentee balloting laws have changed. And so the potential for confusion is there, and certainly election officials are doing their best to try to make sure that confusion is minimized.
And just to pick up on that, and looking at these new voter ID laws, now some have been upheld and some have been delayed, as I would say, in Pennsylvania, and some have been blocked as well. Is it the courts that have blocked these laws? Is that basically the state courts when ID laws have been blocked?
Well, I mean, there's a variety of ways that this has played out. It's one thing that I think is very important to recognize is that not all ID laws are created equal here, and every law is a little bit different from other laws. And so there have been cases where laws have been proposed, but they've died in the legislature. They've been vetoed by the governor. There are cases where constitutional amendments are going on the ballot, such as in Minnesota with regard to voter ID. There are cases where the Justice Department has declined to allow a state to go forward with ID laws, such as in Texas and in South Carolina. And in South Carolina, they're now in a position not entirely dissimilar to Pennsylvania, where a court has said that the law is okay, but it cannot go into effect for the 2012 election. And then, of course, there are cases where the law has gone before state and federal courts and has been challenged.
And where did these voter ID laws come from? I mean, as you say, in the last couple of years, a number of states have passed these laws. Governors signed them into law. What's been the impetus?
I mean, I think you'd have to ask the individual legislators who devised them. I think it is factual to say that in most cases they have come from Republican legislators in the last couple of years who are concerned about the possibility of fraud and want to protect against the possibility of people coming to vote impersonating another voter. But in some cases, it's not entirely Republicans. Rhode Island passed a law that Democrats supported that requires ID. It is not one of the more strict photo ID laws, and it's an effort to bridge the gap, I think, between those on who have a rigid ideological view that says voter fraud is pervasive and those who have a rigid ideological view that says millions of voters will be disenfranchised by this. There's an effort to try to make sure that the integrity of the elections are protected, while at the same time making sure no eligible voters are disenfranchised.
But just picking up on that, and because we're in Pennsylvania, we've done a lot of programs about this voter ID law, and when it comes to these allegations of fraud, it seems that the supporters of these laws either can't come up with an example of pervasive voter fraud, or if they do come up with examples, it's more registration improprieties than it is actually voter fraud.
I mean, I think it's fair to say, as a factual matter, that there has been those that have sought to defend these laws have had difficulty coming up with examples in court of fraud that these kinds of laws would prevent. On the other hand, there are those who have sought to challenge these laws who have had difficulty in some places like Indiana of demonstrating that there was going to be extensive disenfranchisement as a result of the laws. I think what's really interesting is there are efforts by some people like Republican Secretary of State John Husted in Ohio and people like Democratic Secretary of State Ralph Mollis in Rhode Island and others in Rhode Island to try to find a middle ground, to try to find a way to protect the integrity, to allay people's concerns about possible fraud, while at the same time ensuring that there are ways that eligible voters who don't have ID can nevertheless cast a ballot that will be counted.
And I had noticed in the various shows that we've done that at least in Pennsylvania, there was support for voter ID laws. Is that pretty true across the country?
Yeah, I mean, if you look at polling on the subject, there is widespread support for voter ID laws. Now, of course, voter ID means different things to different people, and one of the challenges in any kind of polling is to try to look at the various kinds of ID that there are on a spectrum. There are about 30 states that have some kind of ID that's required, but about 19 of those states have a long list of IDs that could suffice that aren't necessarily photo ID and also allow for some fail-safe if you don't have an ID. And there are only about 4 states that have a really strict photo ID that if you don't have it, you can't vote and that ballot won't be counted unless you show up with a photo ID. Those include Georgia, Indiana, Kansas, and Tennessee. So I think it's important. I think a lot of voters say we do like ID. We are worried about fraud. And on the other hand, I think a lot of voters are also very concerned and want to make sure that everyone who's eligible gets to cast a ballot.
I noticed when President Obama voted yesterday in Illinois, I guess it was Chicago, he did show his ID. But of course, you know, he's the most well-known person in the world.
And nevertheless, I understand that ID was pretty well scrutinized by the poll worker.
Well, and speaking of which, and this is a sort of a broad question, but do you think poll workers who are, you know, there dealing with voters or going to be there dealing with voters, do you think they're adequately educated about what the laws are and what people need to bring to the polls?
I know I work with election officials all over the country, and I know these election officials do a great job of trying to make sure that these individuals who are doing a great civic duty, a great service to all of us by serving at the polls, they basically work 18-hour days for very little money to help the machinery of elections work, especially in a presidential election. And if you think about it, here's a day once every 4 years where about two-thirds of Americans turn out to cast a ballot, and that's a tremendous activity that only occurs once every 4 years. You can imagine the logistical challenges that go along with it. I think one of the great stories here is not that there are occasional problems with that, but actually that election officials and poll workers and voters get it right so much of the time, well over 99% of the time, really close to 100%. And of course, they're doing a great job every election in minimizing it even more, minimizing the problems.
And that's David Becker. He's a director of election initiatives for the Pew Charitable Trust. And we asked him to join us today in Radio Times. We began by talking about Pennsylvania's voter ID law. And we asked David to join us to talk more broadly about voting rights, what people need to do or need to think about when they go to the poll to vote on November 6th. And we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. David, the last time you were on, we were talking about a then-new report that you wrote for Pew, inaccurate, costly, and inefficient evidence that America's voting registration system needs an upgrade. You're contending that it's our voter registration system that's really in need of a fix.
I think that's right. If you had to pick one thing to fix, and of course we don't necessarily have to do that, but if there were one problem, one challenge that leads to the most problems throughout the election cycle, it's voter registration. Inaccurate or not up-to-date information on the voter rolls can lead to problems throughout the election cycle, voters not receiving the materials they're supposed to receive, voters having confusion as a result of that, ballots going to the wrong place, and then even worse, long lines and delays at the polls on election day as poll workers are trying to find and reconcile information from voters that doesn't match what's on the list. So if election officials really want to solve a lot of the challenges they face throughout the cycle, they're going to work to get their voter rolls as accurate as complete as possible. And since that study, we've been working very closely, initially with seven states who've been pioneers in this area: Washington, Nevada, Utah, Colorado, Virginia, Delaware, and Maryland, who are starting to more securely and in a much more comprehensive way share data so they can identify when people have moved, for instance, so they can contact those people and try to get their information up to date, not right before the election, not on election day, but when that move happens, so that the rolls can be accurate throughout the cycle.
But is it really going from a you know, paper and pencil system or a paper and pen system to a more digital internet-driven system?
Yeah, I think that's definitely true. The states, there were only two states that had online voter registration where you could actually complete an entire voter registration online without ever having to send something in. The only two states had that in 2008, Arizona and Washington. They represented only about 10 million or a little more Americans at that point in time. In 2012, there are now 13 states that have online voter registration, representing nearly 100 million Americans, as California and New York has joined that group. And online voter registration is a great tool. States who have implemented it, and these are states that are solidly Republican, solidly Democrat, and in the middle, so it's not an ideological reform, but the states who have implemented it have seen that the records are much more accurate. They see greatly reduced costs as a result of so much of the registration activity being transferred from paper and pen to electronic forms of registration.
So what took so long?
I think we just needed to measure how well it was working. There was some, you know, Arizona was the pioneer in this. Arizona implemented it in 2002, and Washington State joined them in early 2008. And as we started looking at data, and Pew did a study on this in 2009, it was very clear that the security concerns were being dealt with very well. It was at least as secure a method of registration as paper. It was much more convenient for voters. Voters loved it, and it wasn't just young voters. It was also voters across the age spectrum as well who liked the idea of being able to complete a voter registration at midnight sitting in their pajamas at home. So I think it's picking up steam now, and now that we have, you know, nearly half of all, about a third of all Americans who have access to online registration, and many more states who are considering it and working on ways to implement it in future election cycles, I think we're going to see this trend continuing.
And has it resulted in more people voting?
I think it's hard to say whether it results in more people voting. It's unclear whether or not those who are registering electronically are people who would otherwise have registered by paper, or whether these are new registrants. One thing that is clear is that when you get good quality data in the voter registration list, and you get people to register to vote in the most convenient way possible, as early before an election as possible, you give the campaigns, you give the civic engagement groups and others a much better tool to try to engage with those voters and try to get them to turn out to vote for whatever reason. This is, again, across the ideological spectrum. So if we can make a more efficient process where people have an incentive to get onto the rolls, not in October of a presidential election year, but in January of an odd-numbered year, that would be a great thing and could potentially lead to more civic engagement, because groups will be able to reach those voters better.
I've heard some suggest automatic registration when someone turns 18, that they are automatically registered to vote. Does that make any sense to you?
Yeah, one of the challenges that states have is there's no magic list in the United States where you can just find a list of all citizens by age and by address. So the challenge is finding data sources that will give you an ability to reach out to those voters, and whether it's to automatically register or encourage them to register, get them to do that. So these seven states that we're working with are starting to get a multitude of data sources together to look at that, to be able to reach out to those voters. And one of the other things to recognize, of course, voter lists are one of those lists that governments hold that are entirely public. And so you want to be protective of people's privacy at the same time, and not just automatically, without any concern for their privacy, put them on a public list unless they've done something to indicate that they want to be on that list.
It is interesting, as some people have already voted. Here in Pennsylvania, we get, you know, one day to vote, and just underscores what you've been saying all along, David, which is that states are largely in control of how people vote within their boundaries.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, we have 50 different sets of election laws in the 50 states, and that doesn't even count D.C. and the territories. And it's always a challenge if you're moving between states, particularly if you're a military voter or another voter who's highly mobile, to know what the laws are in your state. But whereas in Pennsylvania, virtually all of the voting, with the exception of absentee ballots that require an excuse, is going to be done on Election Day in Pennsylvania. You know, just next door in Ohio, there are nearly a million people who have already voted as of yesterday. It's probably going to exceed a million today. And there's about 8.4 million who voted early, have actually cast ballots nationwide as of yesterday.
And is early voting, if we're talking about democracy and turnout and engagement, does early voting result in all those things?
I think it's, again, that's a very hard thing to measure. There are so many things that can affect turnout. Weather can affect turnout. What's on the ballot definitely affects turnout. So it's very hard to isolate one factor as encouraging turnout. What I think is clear is that there has been a trend moving towards giving more voters choices as to when and how they vote. And there's also there also tends to be very positive opinions of voters in the states where they have lots of options, that they can choose those options. And there are states like Colorado and California where you not only have the option of voting in person early, you not only have the option of voting in person on Election Day, you don't only have the option of getting a no-excuse absentee ballot whenever you want one, you can also choose to be a permanent mail voter where they'll automatically send you ballots every election after you request that. And then, of course, there are states like Oregon and Washington where they entirely vote by mail. Everyone gets a mail ballot and sends it in.
So do we make it hard to vote in this country?
I don't know that we make it hard to vote. I think one of the things that's actually really good about our federal system, where every state sets their own laws, and there are certainly some challenges that go along that as well, is that states get to try out new ideas that might not have occurred to them or might not have been implemented if they had to originate from Washington. And so things like all-mail voting in Oregon and Washington, which might work well there but might not be the right answer in other places in the country, things like no excuse and permanent absentee status, which might work in some areas, things like Election Day registration, which work in some areas and that other states don't think work, online voter registration, which percolated up from the states, didn't originate in Washington. Those kinds of things can start to generate support and hopefully over time be voluntarily adopted by the states without requiring them to adopt them, because we can demonstrate that they generate efficiencies. They cost less. States that have early voting will tell you that while they are spending money on maintaining polling sites in advance of Election Day, everyone who votes early is someone who doesn't have to show up in lines at the polling places on Election Day. So that ultimately saves money in the long run, and so there are some efficiencies that can be generated, and it's not just all about turnout.
Well, let's take a break, and we'll get back to our conversation talking with David Becker. He's Director of Elections Election Initiatives for the Pew Charitable Trust. Wrote a report for Pew called Inaccurate, Costly, and Inefficient Evidence That America's Voter Registration System Needs an Upgrade. He's a former senior trial attorney in the voting section of the Department of Justice's Civil Rights Division. He also supervised federal monitoring of elections, and he helped direct the Department of Justice's policy on enforcing the Help America Vote Act. That's HAVA. And we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Are you or is someone you know overweight? Drexel University is currently enrolling overweight participants in Mind Your Health, a research study evaluating methods of losing weight and keeping it off without medication. These programs are funded by the National Institutes of Health. More information online at drexel.edu/weightloss or 215-762-4900. That's 215-762-4900. Drexel supports WHYY.
I can speed up and slow down the modulation.
On the next Fresh Air from the Archive, an interview with the late Robert Moog. A festival of electronic and visionary music in tribute to him takes place this weekend. Also from the Archive, an interview with John Cage. His work is the subject of international celebrations this year, marking the centennial of his birth. Join us.
This afternoon at 3 and again tonight at 7 on WHYY.
I'm Robin Young. Join us next time for the news and these stories here and now. The fungal meningitis outbreak continues to sicken people. What are the next steps for patients in the investigation and for future oversight? Also, actor John Hawkes on playing a paralyzed man in the new film, The Sessions. That's Public Radio's Daily Digest of News and Culture here and now.
Today at noon on WHYY.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. We are talking about the right to vote, and David Becker, our guest, Director of Election Initiatives for the Pew Charitable Trust, and we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. David, there have been poll watchers in the past, and we certainly are hearing about poll watchers in this election. What are they allowed to do? What are poll watchers allowed to do when they're watching people vote?
Well, this varies greatly by state, unfortunately. So there's no one set answer. I think in general, poll watchers are supposed to do exactly what their name suggests. They're allowed to watch the polls. They're allowed to take notes. They're allowed to then, in a best case scenario, reach out to election officials if they see some kind of issue that they want addressed, so that the election officials can duly consider that and decide what to do. And in general, what they are absolutely not supposed to do is interfere with the voting process. I can tell you, even with the Department of Justice when I was there, and I supervised monitoring of dozens of elections, even Department of Justice monitors are strictly instructed to avoid interfering with the elections process in the polling place in any way, even if there's a major irregularity of some sort or something that raises a concern. It's usually addressed with the election officials who are authorized to deal with that problem.
But does that mean they can't talk to voters, or they can't get within a certain distance of voters?
It varies entirely by state. There are states that allow poll watchers or challengers to challenge voters when they're checking in. There are states that allow people to approach voters in the polling place, and some that restrict it to outside the polling place. And of course, included in this is the fact that many voters need assistance and are legally entitled to assistance in casting their ballot, either because they might have difficulty reading or understanding because of language issues, and many people who might be stationed in the polls might be there to help voters in a very legal way cast a ballot that they'll fully understand.
Are poll watchers allowed to see the names of people who have voted? Is that public information that they
can? In most states, that is public information. In fact, in many states, they'll hang a polling list outside the polling place that they'll update regularly so that campaigns, poll watchers, others can go see who's already voted. It's not for any negative reason. It's so that they can concentrate their efforts and turn out on those who haven't voted yet.
But are there some people that have used that to challenge people's rights to vote?
Undoubtedly, they have, and of course, the record of who has voted in an election is public, not just on election day. It's public after that as well. So this goes back to why voter registration records are it's so important to have voter registration records that are accurate, because in close elections, it's inevitable that whoever loses, regardless of party, one of the very first things they're going to do is challenge the eligibility of voters who they think did not vote for them based on demographics or location or something else. And if you can minimize the grounds for which people can challenge voters after an election by making sure that all of their information is up to date and they can cast a regular ballot that is as easy to cast as possible, then you can reduce some of this hyper-partisan post-election litigation.
I was reading something about actually Texas. The state attorney general wants to make sure that a group of European election monitors won't be allowed to do poll watching. Do you know if Texas is allowed to do that? And do you know about European election monitors?
I know about the European election monitors. My understanding is they have been invited here. It's a very small party to come and monitor elections. And I am not an expert on Texas state law, so I don't know whether or not those poll watchers are running afoul of Texas state law in any way. I do know that there are many in Texas and throughout the nation who are planning to poll watch. And I think in general, the best thing for democracy is transparency. And as long as there's no intimidation, there's no interference with the voting process, I think it's good practice for us to show the world as the oldest democracy how our machinery of democracy operates.
Because we watch other people vote in other countries, do we not?
Yes, we have. I mean, I personally monitor elections overseas for organizations that do that work, and the United States obviously works to promote democracy in many countries. So that's something that, you know, should be considered, and I, you know, hopefully that whoever is watching the polls or monitoring the polls will obey and know the state laws in the states in which they're operating. That's very, very important, and that when it's appropriate, then that everyone will act as good hosts and seek to, again, the most important thing is to make sure that all eligible voters can cast a ballot as easily as possible.
Let's get some callers in. We have, looks like Margaret from Wynwood joining us on Radio Times. And Margaret, go ahead. You're on the air.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I am so glad you're having this program.
Thank you.
I was in complete agreement with your first speaker about the fact that as a psychologist, and this is true in advertising, the first message you convey in an ad is what is heard. So I do believe that the current messaging is very misleading and should be corrected. And with your current speaker, I really applaud your publicizing all the efforts to make our voting process more transparent and clear. And it's clear to me that this voter ID law, as has been said, is a solution in search of a problem. There is not really a problem. And I think we're going back to times of Jim Crow in disenfranchising a big part of our population, and we should be transparent. Texas should be proud to welcome visitors and show its democratic process. And I and my friends are planning to not show ID during this election season, as a form of civil opposition to this law being put into effect.
Well, Margaret, I appreciate the call to Radio Times. And David, we were talking at the beginning of the show with the legal director of the Pennsylvania ACLU and the spokesperson for the Department of State about Pennsylvania's voter ID. And there is, I'm looking at a billboard on the side of a bus from the Pennsylvania Department of State, and it says, "This election day, if you have it, show it." And the "show it" are the sort of gigantic words on that billboard. When you go to the front page of the Pennsylvania Department of State, there's a picture, and there's someone holding a driver's license, and big letters it says voter ID, and then under it it says voters will be asked but not required to show an acceptable photo ID on election day. And critics are saying this is a confusing message, and I'd be curious about how you see Pennsylvania struggling with this issue.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't seen the billboard specifically, and Pennsylvanians should know they're not alone in this. As I mentioned, there's been a lot of election law changes across the country, a lot of challenges to these laws. I think one of the most important things right now is we're 11 days
yes,
before the election, and it's important that we try to put tools in place that give voters the best, most accurate information possible so they can exercise their right to vote. And so there are some great tools out there. We've partnered with tech companies like Google and Microsoft and Facebook on a project we call the Voting Information Project. Listeners can go to votinginfoproject.org and check it out. And on Election Day and even before then, probably about a week before Election Day, people can go on to Google, people can go on to Microsoft's Bing. There'll be tools on Facebook available where you'll be able to enter your address and not only receive information on where your polling place is, directions on how to get there, but also information on what's on the ballot so you can educate yourself before you go to the polls. And very importantly, also information on whether you need to bring ID and what kind of ID is required. And that information is all official information, and so people will be able to access. I think that's something we all need to focus on right now is in the next 11 days, making sure everyone gets the information they need to make sure they can cast a ballot.
Margaret, thanks for the call to Radio Times. Let's see what Eloise from Upper Darby has to say. Eloise, go ahead. You're on the air.
Yes, thank you.
You're welcome.
I'm a poll worker. I'm a minority inspector, so I'm on the other side of the table when people come in and I have to, you know, get them ready to vote. And it's not clear to me whether I have to ask for ID or whether I can ask for ID. I assume they, when the law passed originally and they were going to require ID, obviously I would have had to ask.
Right.
But did the judge's injunction change that? Do we still have to ask for ID? Is it the law? Or is that sort of a choice of the polling place, whether we can ask?
Well, and Eloise, and I'm sorry we didn't get you on earlier when we had Ron Ruman. You could also go to the Committee of 70, to their website, or even I don't have their phone number at their at my fingertips, but for that very specific information. But I hear your confusion, and here's a poll worker, David Becker, and I had asked you earlier whether you think states are doing enough to really educate these poll workers who clearly want to do their job.
Yeah, thanks, Eloise, and also thank you for serving as a poll worker. It's a great public service. Everyone who does it, I encourage everyone to do it. You're asking a very important question, and I guarantee you, you're not the only one asking this question. So I think the best thing for you to do is contact your local county election official. Ask this question directly, get an answer, and encourage them to publicize this on their website, in poll worker training materials, et cetera, so that you can get a consistent answer across the board, so that you're not the only one wondering about this information, because I guarantee you, you're not.
Well, and this is quoting actually from Bob Werner, who's been covering this for the Philadelphia Inquirer, and this is a couple of weeks ago. Bottom line for Pennsylvania voters is this: you will be asked for a photo ID when you show up at the polls on November 6th, but in most cases, you don't need it to cast a ballot. And, you know, it's a confusing message, David.
It can be. You know, they're struggling in Pennsylvania with the fact that there is a law in place that has been that has not been overturned, but that is temporarily suspended, it appears, for this upcoming election.
Yes.
I think, you know, anyone in that position is going to have difficulty. I listened to a bit of the callers earlier, and I can certainly understand the perspective of election officials, both at the county and state level, trying to struggle to prepare voters for the eventual implementation of the voter ID law, while also making sure that they can process voters as easily as possible in this election. It's a tremendous challenge. I think we have to understand and respect that challenge that they're facing and try to get as clear answers as we possibly can. And I think Eloise is doing exactly the right thing. As a poll worker, she needs to get that information very explicit.
And Eloise, thanks for the call, and thanks for what you do on Election Day. David, let me ask you about some reports of misleading robocalls. This seems to happen every 4 years. Is this a growing problem? Is this just sort of a consistent problem when it comes to voting?
I think it does seem to occur every 2 or 4 years, and it's I'm not quite sure why anyone would engage in a tactic to intentionally mislead any voters. Again, the most important thing that election officials and others can do is to make sure that voters get the most accurate, up-to-date, official information that they need, so that there's no confusion. So if what the date of Election Day is, everyone, it's November 6th, Tuesday, November 6th, what the hours the polls are open, whether early voting is available, whether you need an excuse to vote absentee, that's the kind of information election officials have. And as I mentioned also, voters can go to votinginfoproject.org. They can download a tool that will enable them to input their address and get all of that information regardless of where they live in the United States. And they can also go to Google. They can also go to Bing and go to Facebook and find tools like that as well. If they arm themselves with knowledge, then it's really going to make these attempts obsolete.
Going back to this issue of registration fraud, and I know you're very involved in trying to clean up our system of registration, and ACORN was, you know, defunded because of some registration improprieties. I'm looking at the New York Times today talking about a company run by a Nathan Sproul, a well-known Republican campaign operative, former executive director of the Arizona Republican Party. Charges of registering dead people, altering and faking registrations, and other abuses are being investigated in 10 Florida counties. I guess going back to this whole registration issue, and, you know, the idea of registering Mickey Mouse, why do we see allegations and improprieties when it comes to registration?
Well, we as a society, as a nation, have put so much of the responsibility for voter registration in the hands of third parties, because government doesn't do it, and voters often don't think about it until right before a presidential election, which is somewhat understandable. When so much of the power to register voters and responsibility to register voters is with the political parties and third-party groups and campaigns, and so much of that activity is generated by paper, you naturally run into problems. And the vast majority of people who conduct these voter registration drives do so entirely ethically. They do their best to collect that information, but even when they do, they still can't prevent things like duplicates, because there's no reason a voter shouldn't submit a duplicate registration if they're not 100% sure that their information on their voter record is up to date. So again, we've got to move beyond the way we've done registration up till now and since the late 1800s, which is by paper, pen, and postal mail, and move towards more electronic means of registration, where voters have direct control over their information and how and when they get registered, and also give government and election officials better tools so they can successfully reach out to people who might not be registered and encourage them to register to vote in the most efficient and cost-effective and accurate way possible. Like I said, the 7 states that we're currently working with have been pioneers in this area and are already seeing some benefits.
And we are almost out of time here. You mentioned redistricting, but I'm assuming in 15 seconds or less that redistricting also complicates our system.
It certainly complicates it and can confuse voters from the perspective of how they vote on election day in the first election after redistricting. It's very likely that many voters throughout the United States are going to find that they're in a different precinct, they're going to a different polling place, they're voting for a different congressional district, as I am now. That's very common after redistricting, so voters now more than ever need to know where to find information and make sure they're up to date on all the most accurate information for the election.
David Becker, thank you for joining us today on Radio Times.
Thank you, Marty.
You're welcome. He's Director of Election Initiatives for the Pew Charitable Trust. We also spoke with Vic Volchak. He's the Legal Director of the Pennsylvania ACLU. And Ron Ruman, Spokesperson for the Pennsylvania Department of State. Go to whyy.org/radiotimes to find out more about this program, including many new social media features. I'm Marty Moscoen. Thank you so much for joining us in this first hour of Radio Times. Do stay with us, though. We'll be right back.